All right, good afternoon, listeners. This is Adam Gamwell.
And this is Ryan Collins.
We're happy to have you here with us on This Anthropological Life. And so when we were looking at ideas about holidays and you know, Halloween, an article came up actually on the BBC that had to do with gingerbread people. And we thought we'd have to stop and take a moment to talk about, you know, what's happening with this, because it really struck us, because in the holiday season we see, you know, traditions come back around again. Of course, like, again, Halloween and costumes, as well as, you know, gingerbread houses that may go with holiday seasons, or turkeys and Thanksgiving, etc. And so, again, the holiday season here in, you know, this part of the world, and really everywhere, you know, from the fall into the winter, has this really, in the Northern Hemisphere anyway, has this really great collection of traditions that are really worth reflecting on, you know, from an anthropological lens. And so, as I said, there's this article that came up on that came out of Melbourne, Australia, actually, that was looking at gingerbread people that are coming out, but they're specifically marketed as genderless gingerbread figures, and they're vegan too. And so there's this funny image that was put up on Imgur. Again, we'll post the article from the BBC on our website, that talks about this traditional gingerbread, quote, man, right, has been reimagined now in Melbourne as sort of a genderless being, to sort of get away from the idea that you know, this is you know, a gendered thing, because it's a cookie. Now, what's interesting about that, besides, of course, that has some really interesting connotations and commentary about gender, is that the Twitter sphere and the internet itself sort of exploded with, you know, some people were irate, and some people were happy about it, and some people celebrated it. And so it really raises interesting questions that we wanted to take a moment to do sort of a TAL comments on, the idea of the politics of information on the internet. Because, again, the internet can be treated as this sort of Wild West, you know, where anything goes. But really, that's not actually the case, is it?
No, not at all. You know, it's great to think about how these genderless gingerbread figures are prompting us to reconsider some old biases or things that may be outdated in terms of our cultural dynamics and working set. To say a gingerbread man just doesn't quite cut it in the same way, and people are active, you know, taking to the bakery to be activists against this, right? So, but we see this type of critiquing and rehashing of information all the time. As Adam was suggesting, you know, putting it out there that genderless gingerbread figures are something that we should be thinking about in terms of updating our information. The internet is also a resource that can give us confusing or misleading information.
Yeah.
And Wikipedia is one of those places in particular where this was really prominent a few years ago, when people used to create wikis for themselves with fictitious aristocratic titles and being rulers of kingdoms that never existed. Now, this can be kind of fun and misleading, but Wikipedia doesn't allow you to freely change things in the same way anymore. There's a lot of fact checks, there's forums, you have to provide references, and then after the submission process do things get posted in the same way. So you can't just edit somebody like the Queen of England as to being one of the members of the Ninja Turtles anymore.
Unfortunately so, it seems. But it's a great point that you raise. I mean, I even recall when I was in college, was when Wikipedia came out. And for years, it was not allowed to use that as an academic source in your papers because, as you said, Ryan, anybody could edit it. Right, but it's true, like over time, there's been sort of this revisionist idea that we need to actually monitor how these things happen, particularly if this is going to be sort of an open source encyclopedia, right? Which is, again, just a compendium of human knowledge, right?
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, the trolling phase of all this stuff is moved from the Wikipedia pages itself more to the commentary that people leave after articles are posted. And you start to see that the shift has taken from the actual main page article to forums that are dedicated to the subject area. And that's where people's feuds really seem to take place today, as opposed to on the page itself.
Yeah, and one of those that's really interesting too is that we see, again, the rise of these forums, right, and these user reviews. And it does make me kind of reflect on that there was an article that posted a couple of years ago, actually, that reviews on Amazon.com, that the customer reviews that come after the product, because of course, if you've ever been to Amazon or any shopping website, I mean, even any major retailer, even small retailers now, they tend to use as a marketing effort user reviews too, besides they've got the product information and stuff about it. But then at the bottom, Amazon's particularly good about this, is like posting the user reviews, some that are positive, some that are negative. Now with that, there's an article that talked about that people were more likely to trust those other people's, even though they don't know who they are, trust someone's personal comments versus you know, the product description, which of course I think sounds like good consumer sense in some ways, but it's an interesting idea that at least there's some science behind it, that like, you know, they did polls that people cared more about that information. And it goes to show you, I think in some ways, that, you know, despite the age of information in this way, and that the internet is this sort of, you know, conglomerate of information, people still sort of turn to other people, you know, or what they recognize as being other people in this case, and these are user reviews. And so there's something about that, as well as you mentioned the idea of forums, right? That there may be, of course, I mean, there's tons of news articles out there, or articles in anything. But then, of course, below it, there's usually always a pretty active forum section, right? And again, too, that's where people can kind of dive into and put their own information out there. Now, what's interesting with both of these is that sounds fairly neutral, right? That someone can go ahead and just put information out there and then that's that, and then, you know, people can comment on it. And I mean, I've and I imagine you as well, as and most people that may have used the internet regularly, have seen on things like YouTube, there's a fair amount of like what we can call hate speech, or at least dopey hate speech, right? It's not really well articulated. Some mean things that can be left out there. And so it also gives the image that, right, anything goes.
Exactly. And you could even look at this. I'm sure that there's going to be commentary on the page with the genderless gingerbread figures. But these spaces are not neutral zones, as I'm suggesting. These spaces are actually very active places where policy is sort of made and at least perpetuated by allowing people to engage in discussions about something that's maybe seen as potentially positive or proactive, but not necessarily trending with all groups. So these spaces are actually engaging all sides and opinions if you're willing to look at those commentaries and engage in that side of the story.
Yeah, it's a good thing to think about. I'm looking at Facebook's community standards. Again, Facebook has, I think, over 800 million users around the world. It's incredibly one of the, you know, obviously, sounds obvious, right? But the largest social networks in the world, if not the largest. And so they have this community standards page that points out what kinds of things you can say, right? And that there are standards in terms of if we are to offer sort of this, in essence, if you think about it, this global community of 800 million people, that there's certain things that cannot be done. And so what's sort of being said behind the lines here that's worth paying attention to is that there are people that their job is to comb through Facebook into Twitter too, actually, to find things that are not up to these community standards that might equate to hate speech or mm-hmm. to other, you know, basically things that aren't up to these standards. But, you know, again, I think the easiest way to say it is hate speech, or just things that are just blatantly bad things to say.
Well, even biases such as gender dichotomies, in the case of our genderless gingerbread figures, yes. We're looking at something that's outdated, that our culture does seem to be moving on to the idea of being more acceptable of multiple genders and multiple sexes, but it's still toying with how do we grasp getting past that idea. And for a long time still, I bet that we're going to be battling the gender dichotomies that we see.
Certainly.
The false dichotomy, because that's what we still use in our language, and it permeates every fabric and being of our daily discussions, whether we're aware of it or not.
Yeah. I mean, gender is, it's embodied, right?
Right.
It's though anthropologists talk about gender as this discourse, and it is a discourse, right? It's like what it means to be masculine or feminine. I mean, these are adjectives. They're not male or female nouns, but these are adjectives of what it means to be have these sort of characteristics. And you're right. So what we're seeing is that those are going to be with us for a long time because they're not only deeply embodied in ourselves, but they're through the way we talk about the world and think about it and see things. But so it's interesting. So the genderless gingerbread man kind of raises this interest, or genderless gingerbread person, I should say, right? You slip into it because that's the name we've used for forever, right? It raises these interesting questions of like, how are these discourses, ideas changing in some ways? And is a cookie, it's an interesting way to choose to do that, right? It's a bit different than you know, talking about transgenderism with people, or that someone acts as genderqueer or acting in different ways that do not conform to this standardized, you know, Western male, female, masculine, feminine dichotomy, or that we see in a lot of places in the world. But it can move outside of those. And again, because these are discourses. But then it's interesting to see that cookies are the way that this Melbourne bakery decided. Obviously, it's a bakery, so that makes sense as their medium. Mm-hmm. But they would choose to do so, right? And it raises these really interesting questions, both in terms of who's jumping onto the forums and saying yes or no, this is a good or a bad thing, as well as you're right, Ryan, that are we seeing systems change, right? Are we seeing these bigger meta issues of what it means to be masculine and feminine, whether for us as humans or as things around us too, like ginger people, right?
Exactly. The fact that we're even talking about our ginger people today suggests that there is something trending about this. It's not just a non-entity. It's not something that we would disregard as foolish or just mundane, but this is something that actually affects a deeper issue here, and that's why we also see the trending comments circulating more and more, either for or against this type of subject.
Yeah, I think it's well worth reflecting on, and so as we move into the holiday season, we're going to pay attention to more of these kinds of things, and sort of what issues pop up in terms of are we seeing paradigms like gender sort of being questioned through something like a cookie, and what that might mean.
And this is a perfect thing to discuss around Halloween as we start to see our traditional costumes come into play and how things year after year, subjects tend to be focused on what is an appropriate costume and what is funny, what is comical, what is fitting. And this is always a tension that's going back and forth. So perhaps we'll speak more on this subject soon.
I think we shall. Thanks for listening so far on TAL Comments. We'll see you guys shortly.
Hello, hello, and welcome back. This is Ryan Collins.
And this is Adam Gamwell.
So on our last segment of TAL, we were discussing the notion of the genderless gingerbread man. Genderless gingerbread figures. I apologize.
Exactly, right? It's hard to say it.
It's very difficult to get past. And this notion of getting past the paradigm has led us to think that it might be good to engage the audience in a new way. So what we're going to do this week is through our Facebook site, we're going to be using polls to start throwing out there, not only as a poll, but as a post forum for paradigm shifts that we're seeing across the internet. So articles and themes such as genderless gingerbread figures or the ways in which languages are still enforcing certain ideologies over gender binaries or trying to break them. These are things that we could use to engage the audience in new ways. So we would like to hear your input on this forum or post the links that you think our audience thinks about is something that we can use to engage in this conversation in a much wider level.
I think it's a great idea. So we were sort of inspired to do this actually when we presented this Anthropological Life as a radio show and as a way of using social media and digital audio to sort of bridge academics and scholars and lay people and different forms of thinking and philosophies and ideas together in sort of an inaccessible form. And so we were able to present this at the International Academic Forum in September, and it really inspired us to think about how to make the show much more open source, much more crowdsourced, drawing upon you, our listeners, and because we get most of our inspiration from you all anyway. And so I think what Ryan's saying is this is a fun new idea we've been talking about, how to sort of get more direct feedback and more ideas and see what you're talking about too. And so the genderless gingerbread person or figure really sort of, it felt like the right time for us to start doing this.
Exactly. And then there's also linguistic discussions about bringing in the pronoun Z as opposed to she or he. And things like this are really showing that there are changes or that the notion of the change is trending enough to catch people's attention in a way that it hasn't been in the past. So why now? Why change? And why break these paradigms? Or why try?
Right. And what are the changes that we see happening?
Exactly.
So we encourage you, we'll set up a Facebook forum on this Anthropological Life's page.
And we'll also be trolling through Twitter, Instagram, and our normal website of thisanthrolife.com.
Cool. So we look forward to hearing from you, and we're excited we're going to get that up a little later today. And it seems like it'll be a fun new way to sort of crowdsource and get some more audience input. Because, digital radio can be kind of a one-way street. Podcasting can be this, unidirectional sort of, we talk out. We, of course, get things on Twitter and email, and so we're very thankful for the folks that have sent us information, ideas, and thoughts throughout the weeks, whether during the show or, in between when we're sort of talking about what episodes we're making. But again, we're excited to try this and do sort of more concentrated conversation and see what you're reading about when it comes to gender, when it comes to paradigm shifts, when it comes to genderless gingerbread figures, etc.
Exactly. And that segues us into the subject that we've also been thinking about lately, too, and that is the Halloween costume.
That's right, the Halloween costume.
We're seeing trends year after year of certain Halloween costumes that may be good things and may be bad things that we're seeing that reinforce certain paradigms, but also try to break them down in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
If one of our colleagues was here with us right now, I'm sure we would get more into the sexy costumes that Amy Haynes was talking about last week that we should probably approach in a different way.
We shall indeed.
But then there's also the costumes which try to make fun of tensions, issues, biases that maybe don't do so effectively as well.
Yeah, I think it's there's a lot of good things to think about there. One thing I'm going to point out just so it sounds clear is that we did talk about sexy costumes because we actually right. we do have Halloween episodes that exist. We're bringing the Halloween costume episode today because, again, as I said when we introed today's episode, we're going to give you sort of a trick and a treat today. And not only are we going to demo and introduce our idea of having an online forum to help us, gather more ideas and to see what you guys are thinking about, but a second thing, or I even said, guys, see my gendered speech, what you all are thinking about, is that we're also going to start offering more of ourselves, as we like to call, information. And so, again, this Anthropological Life isn't the straight-up news show, but again, it's we want to take complex issues and you know, celebrate that they are complex, and there's more than one way to talk about them. And so what we've done already, actually, is we've started putting the ideas together for our Halloween episode. Now, we're not airing those right now. Right now, as Ryan and I are having a conversation about Halloween costumes, that's inspired by the conversation that we already had. And what we're going to do is we're going to offer you, again, this is kind of the I don't know if it's the trick or the treat. It's one of the two, right?
It's one or two.
We're not really sure which one it is, or the other one. And so we're going to sort of preview some of the ideas today. We're going to have a little conversation about them, reflecting on some of the stuff we brought up. And then later, we're going to add the other episodes about the Halloween sort of spirits and costumes and different kinds of issues we talked about surrounding them.
With movie monsters, cinema,
mythology
scenes,
all sorts of stuff,
so
right?
many things, ancestor worship, thinking about the dead, thinking about this time of year and the harvest.
Yeah, so I mean there's so many great connections, and so we've had some of these discussions already, and so we're going to have some of them now, and then we're going to add these conversations to the bigger picture and sort of offer you what this is going to show you, which we're really excited to debut, is sort of us again in formation. Now, this is us thinking about the issues together, talking about them and putting them out there. But again, we're doing this in a bit different ways. Like, obviously, we're having a live conversation right now, as well as we've got some recorded podcasts of Halloween spirit monster reflections that we did a little bit ago. And then we're going to put them all together and offer this sort of, you know, it's kind of like a DVD package, and then, like, you know, it's got the making of behind it. We thought it'd be kind of fun just to see what it's like. And that's sort of the I don't know if that's the trick or the treat, whatever, you know, but it's more something if we're going to use these binaries. You know, in different ways that we've approached the episode, and you can see sort of how we're thinking about it and how we're sort of evolving in our own thinking as we have these conversations.
Exactly. And anyway, often the trick is the treat, right?
Yes, exactly. But so that brings us back to the point that we're talking about sexy costumes. That's what inspired me to think about this. And that, so we did, in fact, talk about that before and how different kinds of costumes have different forms of being appropriate or less appropriate. So we kind of took a caveat there, but we'll come back to the episode. And we're thinking about, again, what are Halloween costumes doing? And this is the time of year that we're seeing all sorts of, you know, notions that you can dress up and change, and notions of change in the seasons, notions of change in how we're dressing. I mean, you know, and it even harkens to more springtime things like Carnival and like the end of winter. But again, these notions, these big changes happening where costumes come in, and the idea you sort of play with things like gender, you play with things like who you can be, what it is, you know, what's appropriate to dress in what forms, you know, and who can do it. And so we wanted to sort of open the conversation thinking about that. And you know, I haven't dressed in too many crazy costumes that I know of that I can think of, but we've heard, I mean, what was it? Was it Chris Brown dressed in whiteface last year, which raised a lot of big issue, you know. It's a very interesting point, because so what whiteface is, of course, is this take on blackface, which is an early 20th century and like late 19th century sort of vaudeville acting thing where white people would paint themselves as black people, usually with these sort of gross characteristics that they would like intentionally make, you know, sort of these grotesque, not they didn't really actually resemble people at all, right? But they were these sort of Nation's hateful ideology. Right.
And, but even his costume, which was a play on this, was a take on how other celebrities have been doing blackface in recent times as well. And a terrible attempt to make light of a poor situation.
Yeah.
So these type of costumes are addressing these real world problems, real world social issues, in a way that only perpetuates them. It doesn't make light of them, which was the intended goal.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, that's the question even to think about the genderless gingerbread person too, right? Is that, you know, what's an effective way to sort of challenge paradigms that doesn't also perpetuate them, right? In some ways, because acknowledging that these things exist and try to step outside them is an interesting thing. And I don't know that costumes themselves do it. You know, we can keep riffing on them. But thinking about this idea in the bigger picture too, we brought up in today's episode with this notion that, obviously, Chris Brown's attempt, I think, was a little misguided as well, but it does raise interesting questions about how do you respond to a paradigm that is oppressive, you know, that obviously has, in this case, racial hierarchies.
Right. And, you know, thinking about Halloween in general and the way that we think of costumes and monsters and fantasy, it's easy to get caught up in a world in which fantasy and reality collide. There are also huge outcries with actors and actresses dressing as Native Americans, either from movies or for were sort of pseudo real imagery, but that also raises a lot of tension. So there's become a huge critique on what's actually appropriate for Halloween. What are we really trying to do when we dress up? What type of images are we perpetuating? What type of images are we breaking down? And what this is getting to is, are some of our costumes innately biased in ways that we're not really aware of? And this is a good thing to think about for the future and for the costumes that you might have for this Halloween.
Right. Well, I mean, it, actually this morning on The Takeaway with John Hockenberry, he was actually talking about that we are most likely, and I mean, this doesn't, you know, he didn't make the idea, but he's just pointing out that we are going to see a rise in Ebola hazmat suits for costumes this year. And again, it gets to the question that you're asking, Ryan, like what is the point of the costume? You know, what is it trying to do? And you can think about, you know, to sort of dip into All Hallows Eve and sort of the past ideas of Halloween, that costumes were somewhat less important and not as much a part of it as was really this notion that, you know, again, seasons are changing, that the harvest is coming, and that later it was sort of appropriated in Catholic mythology, religion, about that this has to do with the return of All Saints. And again, this relation that the loved ones are somehow closer to this world than they have, that have passed over.
Right. And if we think about these types of spirits, the spirits of Halloween, one of the big purposes of these type of festivals in antiquity and even today has been to sort of direct attention to what is scary, to direct attention to what is to what the unknown is, to the dead, to themes of the themes of sickness, the themes of terrifying things, in order to make them more accessible, to make them more open, so that you can be better prepared for the coming winter months when people do get sick, when people do die of the poor weather conditions, when people don't exactly always have enough food to get through and prosper through the winter, because the winter is scary. And it's a time of year when bad things happen. So you want to be you want to familiarize yourself with this otherness, which is scary, which is death, which is disease. And if we think about the hazmat suit today for Halloween as an Ebola costume, that on the one hand plays into what Halloween is about, readying you for what is coming or for something that's out there that's like the boogeyman. But on the other hand, with today's global society, we am conjuring our co-host Amy Haynes right now, it doesn't exactly account for the caring that people have. It doesn't exactly account for the fact that there are many people who are affected by this, and they could find such a costume as being inconsiderate, and that could spark outrage.
In the least, right?
Exactly. So we have this tension of what the purpose of Halloween is, which is to familiarize yourself with something that's other and strange and terrifying, but also to be considerate.
Yeah, it's a really great encapsulation. There is this tension there, this sort of paradox of Halloween, right? And It is one of the questions of how, you know, how does one engage that? What is the best way to do that? Like, what kind of costume is there? Like, the safe middle costume? Or again, or but as you're raising the great point of, like, what is the point of the costume, right, mm-hmm. in this case? And familiarizing yourself with the unknown with the other is a really wonderful anthropological reflection anyway, right? And that's so much of what we see Halloween is about, right? And is that, and this reminds me of Edward Said's notion of Orientalism, right? This famous piece that he wrote that was sort of how Europeans would characterize the entire Asian continent and subcontinent. And the idea, of course, that sounds ludicrous if you think about it, but so it's, again, one continent characterizing another one. But again, we're talking continentals, right? This is a huge issue. This is massive amounts of people.
Right.
Right, and assuming that they're all somehow similar, but they're different. Therefore, this is called othering, right? This is the notion of saying that this other group is different. Now, othering can take, you know, the challenge, of course, is once you sort of say that somebody is categorically different, then this can be a slippery slope into what a lot of anthropologists looked at, and that can move into things like racism, things like sexism, basically these hierarchies that come into social hierarchy, saying that one group is somehow better, another one is somehow less human or not as good.
Right, or that there are characteristics about a group which are fundamentally not true. Mm. Such and such, have they all do this, and we do this,
right,
which may categorically be false. If you look at ancient accounts of Herodotus in Egypt, he talks about how the ancient Egyptians were somehow eating outside and defecating inside by their dinner tables. He's making this association because of perceptions of ideas in the ancient past that had no bearing on reality, because he's so convinced at the time that they have to be different. So they must be an inversion of what ancient Greeks was.
Interesting. Yeah, and so that just goes to show you in terms of it's being aware of the observer's bias in this case, right?
Exactly. So if this thing that we can see about othering people is in full motion at 400 BC, we can certainly expect it to be alive and well today.
Yeah, it's a great point, right? It hasn't been squelched. And this again, speaks back to the idea we're talking about of even the genderless gingerbread person, or indeed what costumes are doing, right? Again, is it, you know, emphasizing difference in this case, or this otherness that we're mm-hmm. talking about? And is it doing so in a way that also, as you said, sort of prepares one to be aware of things they don't know about, the potential dangers out there, or again, trying to make fun of them or making light?
Right.
And it's a great, I guess, thing to think about, because again, humor can be an important point of dealing with the unknown as well, right? That's, you know, if you watch any film, there's always usually the sarcastic character in the horror film that's like, yeah, whatever, it's not a big deal. And of course, they die first. But again, the idea that, like, you know, how people deal with the unknown and the scaredness, you know, and that humor can be one way to do that. And of course, that can sort of devolve into sarcasm and cynicism, or it can sort of be used to say, let's diffuse some conflict by realizing that all of these social situations are in some ways social. That is, that we make them up together. Doesn't mean they don't have deep roots and there's not a lot of hurt out there, but, you know, there's different ways that they can be interacted with, right? And humor can be one of those in this notion of the unknown.